Okay, so third day of the retreat. Hopefully people are settling, feeling settled, a bit more anyway. That's usually third day is kind of a time that there's a yeah, it's kind of a shift. We really are on retreat, so it, letting that inform everything. And I think one of the things that's important to be bringing up as a perspective and is just delighting in the opportunity to be here with good people, being in a quiet, conducive environment, having the opportunity to settle the mind, to train the mind. This is something worth delighting in. We can think about things in various different ways. We can think, retreat, it's a lot of hard work, and it is. The retreat, it's a great opportunity for delighting and peacefulness. And it is, and all of the different things, different perceptions that how we can frame things and think about things, they have a validity to them. But we have to pay attention to what we say, encourage and support in our minds. One of the things that the Buddha said is that something like, whatever one thinks and ponders on, that becomes the basis of one's awareness, the direction of one's awareness, so that we and that's part of the training, is learning how to direct our thoughts, what direction our thoughts and feelings and emotions, which way they go in. And sometimes you sort of look at the mind and say, well, they go all over the place. What do I do? But we can have many different thoughts and many different feelings, but they can still, as we become more aware and attend to our thought processes and in a skillful way, they can start to line up with each other. They can start to function together. It's sort of like if you're in the forest and you see millipedes. We got tons of millipedes at Ubayagiri, and you think, they've got all these legs. How do they actually walk? With so many legs, you'd think they'd get tangled up, but it all works together. It's all smooth, and you see them walking along the ground, and they get from point A to point A to point B, very comfortably. They all work together. They all function together, and that's similar to our own various thoughts and feelings as we pay attention, we learn, we train, our thoughts and feelings start to work together. They work with each other. And one can experience a sense of ease and well-being. So the cultivation of our meditation is an opportunity to be working on that. And of course, the first thing we need to be doing is to just to become aware, becoming aware of our body, of our posture, of our breath, and using that as the anchor, as we attend with mindfulness to the sensation of the breath as it comes in, the breath as it goes out. We're applying our mind to that, applying the mind to the sensation of the breath, applying the mind to the feeling within the body, letting the using that thought process in the scriptural language, there's two particular words that are used that for the thought processes, vitakka and vichara. And vitakka, I'm translating different ways. Good translation, I think, is directed thought. Vichara is evaluation. And so one directs thought toward the sensation of the breath, and then to evaluate what's happening. So I can remember Ajahn Chah talking about it, and in the way that he said it's like we lift up our object of awareness to the mind with vitakka, and then it's like lifting up this clock. We lift up the sensation of the breath into the mind with that directing of thought. And then with vichara, we sustain that and take an interest in it, evaluating what's the quality of the sensation, what's the quality of the mind, is the mind interested, looking at it with interest. Then inevitably, that interest wanes or we get distracted with something else, and then we need to lift up the sensation of the breath again, lift up the object of meditation. So it's that vitakka and vichara are ways that are the ways that the mind directs attention, directed thought, evaluation. And as that one works with that, using the sensation of the breath, the experience of it in the body, that evaluation is not, making lists of characteristics, but it's more like just taking an interest and sustaining that interest and looking at our experience from different ways. Because so often we approach meditation conditioned by the language that we learn Buddhism in. So often, when we think of the Eightfold Path and the aspects of meditation, then the then what we do that word, you know, the last factor of the path, right concentration. Concentration has connotations in the mind. It does for me anyway. There's a certain tightness there, forcing almost a constriction, concentrating the mind, forcing the mind to do something in a focused and consistent way. But it oftentimes lacks kind of ease and well-being. So that the for our meditation to be able to sustain itself, there has to be an ease, both in the mind as well as in the body, so that learning how to make the meditation kind of easeful or enjoyable, even taking a lot of it is how we direct our interest. Taking an interest, and I guess that's part of the conditioning factor of how we think and ponder is the way that our awareness ends up. So that if we take an interest in something and explore it, that's different than forcing the mind to concentrate on an object, which tends to get bored pretty quickly. One feels like trying to compel the mind to do something. I don't know about anybody else's mind, but I know what my mind does when I try to push it too much. It just sort of resists or digs its heels in. It's sort of like pushing a cat. You know, if anybody has cats, it's their nature. You know, even if you put out a bowl of food and you say, "Oh, go eat that food," you know, even if it's hungry, it's just gonna dig itself in, and it's not going to comply. So finding ways to encourage the mind rather than trying to force the mind, and that aspect of vitakka and vichara is that's how we apply the mind. Applying the mind to the thought process, so that it takes an interest. One of the aspects as well is, it, I think, is grounding our experience in the body. That when we experience an ease within the body, there's a natural relaxing in the mind that takes place, so that it works together. And an image that comes up is how the Buddha describes first jhana, which is kind of the first stage of stable, clear concentration, and stability of mind. That it's accompanied with a rapture and pleasure born of seclusion. So that as we pull ourselves back, both from the external engagement, But then also kind of the internal wanderings of the mind and proliferations. There's a seclusion that we take an interest in. There's a seclusion and settling that we take an interest in. It feels good to not be so scattered, diffuse, being contacted by the senses in so many different ways, and so that there's a rapture and pleasure born of seclusion. But what the Buddha then, how he describes it, is that what one does with that, that rapture and pleasure, the feeling good, is to pervade it through the body. And one, and the beautiful language that the Buddha uses, steeps, fills, drenches, and pervades the body with that rapture and pleasure born of seclusion. So that taking an interest in how to settle, to allow the mind, the body to relax, allow it to enjoy the meditation process, allow it to enjoy seclusion, allow it to enjoy a well-being that naturally arises. So to, as we that interface between the body and the mind, this is a not a, we're not trying to push away any, trying to, conquer the body, overwhelm the body. It's just, we have to inhabit the body. And we have to inhabit our minds. We can't just push away any particular feelings, but we recognize them. And then we can be directing attention in ways that allows the thought processes to be more fruitful, more beneficial, more satisfying. And as we direct our attention in that way, we find that there is a settling that takes place. It's quite natural. So to taking an interest in that, taking an interest in that applying of attention, taking taking an interest. Well, where is it going? What's it doing? This is a fundamental quality that we need to be bringing to mind, this sense of interest. And there's a teaching that the Buddha gives, which are called the four bases of spiritual success, which would just as well apply to any kind of worldly or material success, but the four bases of spiritual success. And the very first one is in the Pali Chanda, which is, I oftentimes translate as interest. Literally, it's translated as desire. Or one could maybe, because desire has different connotations from our use of it, motivation. But anyway, one has to bring up this kind of desire, interest, motivation. And without that, then it's difficult to sustain interest. It's difficult to sustain effort. And And that's actually the second quality that the Buddha points to. Okay, there's chanda, there's virya. Virya being effort, energy, the application of an effort. It's not totally effortless in the sense that, oh, you're just going to sit down, hope that you're going to get peaceful and settled, then it's going to happen somehow because you came on retreat. One has to bring up an actual effort. And effort in this sense doesn't mean scrunching yourself up into to make yourself miserable, but an effort that we apply and sustain. That's what vitakka and vichara are, an application of effort. That directed thought and evaluation are directing of effort and energy. One's directing attention to the body. One's directing attention to, when one directs attention to the body, pays attention to posture, you'll tend to sit up a bit straighter or relax in a way that kind of energizes. And the third quality the Buddha points to is citta, which is kind of the application of mind. So applying the mind to what one's doing, bringing one's whole mind to bear on the task at hand. The last quality is vimamsa, which is investigation, but it has a connotation of reviewing. Just reviewing, okay, what was the results I applied my mind in this way, I tried this out. What was the result? Was it useful? Was it good? Was it fruitful? How can I sustain that? Because often that'll tend to bring up that interest and desire, motivation again. So this cycle will feed itself. Or one sort of investigates and reviews and say, well, that really didn't work. I'm winding myself up. I'm getting trapped in some kind of negativity and making myself miserable. Okay, how do I bring up an interest or a motivation that will shift that? And so, working with the mind. And finding ways to direct attention, and then to sustain that. One puts forth that effort, and it can be. We're not quite sure. Is it, what's going to come of that? But on a certain level, we have to have a bit of confidence or faith in what we're doing, both faith in ourselves, faith in the process. Because we might not be that sure yet. But I remember Ajahn Chah saying, it's like a farmer every year when they sow their fields. They take their rice, and it's like throwing it out into the fields, and you think, oh, wow, it's like you're throwing it away. But the, of course, the result is that the rice turns into seedlings, and the rice grows, and another crop is able to be reaped. But that effort at first is one of, it's like how can any farmer be sure that those seeds that they're throwing out are actually going to come to fruition? And for us as well, when we meditate, when we practice, yeah, there's a certain level. Is there any guarantees? You know, what's going to be become peaceful, wise, clear? I don't think so. It's not sure. They say the experience of so many people over millennia is that, yeah, it's absolutely fruitful, absolutely beneficial. So that we can place a certain amount of trust in the process and in ourselves. And, yeah, if we apply ourselves to this, yeah, there's good results can come from that. And consistency of effort without without getting discouraged or frustrated, and being willing to be patient with the process. This is a part of it, and we learn from that in the process. Another image that Ajahn Chah uses from, and he says, yeah, you know, then in olden times, before any modern conveniences, they used to make fire by rubbing two sticks together. You see, you try that nowadays, and say, you start rubbing and rubbing and rubbing. And say, you sure those old people knew what they were doing? You sure is this possible? It's taking these two sticks and rubbing them together, it's actually going to get fire out of this? And so you sort of stop, evaluate it, and analyze it. Of course, your sticks get cool and you're back at scratch. So sometimes we have to remind ourselves that, okay, these are teachings and trainings that have been passed on by people who've one would think they have no reason to deceive us, so that okay, we have to just take it on, place some confidence in it, and both in the teachings and training as well as in ourselves, that we can do it, and that applying the mind to the meditation object, it's this. You think, how can this be so transforming? How can this be so efficacious? Just sort of, I'm breathing anyway. What does my breath make me peaceful when I don't pay attention to it? But then it's the actual cultivation of awareness and the sustaining of attention that changes the mind, allows the mind to shed much of its chaos and conflicting thoughts. I thought of that this morning when the air is blowing, the furnace is sort of pumping out hot air, and And you just kind of accept, okay, that's what it's doing. But there's this kind of, it's a bit noisy and it's a bit kind of, it's sort of on edge. And then it stops. And boom, everything is really quiet. And in a certain level, it's that's what our mind does, the same thing. There's kind of these conflicting kind of thoughts and proliferations and little twitters off in the edges of consciousness and little flitting here and flitting there. But then as we keep paying attention and that vitakka vichara, lifting up the breath, directing the attention toward the breath, sustaining that attention, the evaluation and that interest that we take in that, and just that process of vitakka vichara, vitakka vichara, then something falls away, and the mind starts to become very quiet. And it's as striking as soon as the furnace stops blowing. The mind can settle. The mind can quiet down. And as we allow the mind to quiet down, and to inhabit that, inhabit the feeling of the mind that settled, inhabit the body that we're experiencing it in, relaxing the body, settling the body, that drench, steep, fill and pervade the body with those rapture and pleasure born of seclusion. And say one can be doing that, directing attention so that one deepens that's like deepening the commitment to our well-being. And as we do that, the mind continues to settle, the mind continues to become more clear, steady. And it just begins with a simple lifting of attention, putting it on the breath, sustaining it, paying attention to one in-breath, paying attention to one out-breath. There's the process is quite simple, but our minds oftentimes don't delight in simplicity. We think, this is too simple. So then we look for something else to do. I wonder, whatever happened to that peaceful state of mind I experienced somewhere in the past? But what's happened is we've tended to complicate it. So that learning how to simplify. And the Kachan Cha, a member, him saying on many occasions, practice is very simple. It's just knowing and letting go. Sort of that's those two qualities of the directing of attention to the knowing. Knowing clearly, directing attention to awareness, it's this ability to know on a fundamental level, just knowing the breath as it comes in and goes out, knowing the body as we're experiencing it, knowing the moods and thoughts that arise, knowing the feelings, knowing the ability to see clearly. this fundamental quality of knowing. But then also letting go. The letting go is a willingness to relinquish, to not complicate the tendency of the mind to complicate, to add on, to proliferate. It's endemic in the human condition. That conscious attention to a quality of letting go. And a letting go isn't pushing away, rejecting. It's a recognition that whatever I carry, whether it's a mood, a thought, a perception, a view, an opinion, an idea, whatever I carry, it's going to get heavy. Just learning how to let it go. In the same way, you think, because some things are really nice, like that one experience starts to experience. The mind settles. Oh, isn't this nice? I like this. And we start to carry that. And by carrying it, we create a burden out of it, and it comes back and tortures us. It's like, and you think, well, how could that be bad? It's like just picking up things. And, well, that's not so heavy. I've got this bell. And it's a nice bell. I like this bell. I'll keep it. But then, it's one more thing that you're carrying. And after a while, you realize, even if it's a nice bell, it's heavy. It gets heavy after a while. So that, the same thing applies with our with the different thoughts and perceptions, and particularly the perceptions of self, of me, of mine, that gets really heavy. So then that attention to a letting go, a willingness to not carry, in the end, we learn to not pick things up, but the willingness to let go and relinquish is a way of creating this ease and clarity, and it's not there's a tendency in the mind to think, well, if I let go of this, will I have anything? So that the mind worries about that. If I let go of this, whether it's a pleasant thought or an unpleasant thought, what will I have anything? Well, just that experimenting with letting go. And this is with, it's a fruitful avenue of exploration as we develop our mindfulness of breathing. It's like mindfulness of breathing, as we breathe in, knowing and letting go. As we breathe out, just knowing and letting go, just paying attention to that process and allowing that kind of space to come into the mind, inhabit the mind, allow that quality of clarity that comes from the knowing, but a lightness and spaciousness that comes from the letting go, allowing oneself to experience that. But then also shining light on the thing, okay, if that, what comes into the mind, or what comes, what tries to inhabit the mind? Is there attending to the letting go, and then recognizing any obstacles that come up, and being willing to relinquish. Again, it's not a matter of pushing away, annihilating, but it's a when one sees clearly, the letting go is that's the kindest thing to do for ourselves. To offer that for reflection this morning, we can just have a short sitting.